There's still time to vote in today's election. Good evening, I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Capitol reporter Dan Boyce tells us why a new study suggests uninsured Montanans will sign up for the Affordable Care Act. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry looks at how using locally produced foods in school lunches is catching on both in Montana and nationally. And in our feature interview, news director Sally Mock talks with pioneer jazz musician Mad Duran about breaking barriers. It's not too late to cast your ballot for today's municipal election in Missoula. Voters are deciding who will serve as Missoula's mayor, a handful of contested city council races, and a $1.7 million urban transportation district mill levy request. Missoula County Elections Office Chief Deputy Rebecca Connors says it's been a busy afternoon for her elections team.
We've had a ton of walk-in late registrants and ballot drop-offs today. We have individuals who are taking advantage of our drive-through ballot drop-off here at the fairgrounds at our election center. Right now, it's probably around 34-35%. As of this morning, we still had 25,300 ballots that were still out there that we are waiting for. You know, I anticipate to see a lot more ballots returned today. In 2011, we had 50.9% voter turnout, and that was just for council member races. So this year, we have a citywide race plus another election going on for Missoula Urban Transportation District. Overall, around 48,650 voters received a ballot, so I'm expecting a lot more ballots today.
Missoula voters have until 8 tonight to drop off those ballots.
And ballots can be dropped off at the following locations: the Missoula County Courthouse, the Missoula County Election Center at the Fairgrounds, Cold Spring School, Hellgate Elementary, Paxson, Russell School, Franklin, Lowell, and Rattlesnake Schools all have ballot drop-offs until 8 p.m.
And if you'd like to pick up a ballot for somebody else, not a problem. Just be sure to bring what amounts to a permission slip.
We had a high number of undeliverable ballots this year, and that's usual after a big election year. And if somebody wants to pick up a ballot on behalf of somebody else, an undeliverable ballot, we do need something in writing stating that voter allows us to release that ballot to another party. Spouse, friends, family members, we do require something in writing, even though you are related or have a connection to that person.
If you haven't registered to vote yet and still want to participate, you just have to do so before that 8 o'clock deadline at the Missoula County Fairgrounds Election Center.
And in other news from around the state, a Missoula man who pleaded guilty but mentally ill to killing a Dixon man and seriously injuring the man's wife has been sentenced to life in prison. KCITV reports 32-year-old Nathan Lee William Calvert was sentenced today by District Judge Kim Christopher for the December 2012 death of Douglas Morgeau and the attack on Cheryl Morgeau. Calvert pleaded guilty in September, saying he had been smoking synthetic marijuana for days and had been off his psychiatric medication for months when he broke into Morgeau's house near Dixon. He told the judge he was paranoid that others were going to kill him. An autopsy found Doug Morgeau was stabbed 54 times. Cheryl Morgeau's throat was cut, but she was able to escape to a neighbor's house to call for help.
A new study released by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research says very few Montanans who do not have health insurance remain uninsured voluntarily. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce says the study suggests these people will sign up for coverage under the Affordable Care Act.
The study from the Bureau of Business and Economic Research stems from a phone survey conducted between September 2012 and February of this year. It finds 20% of the state's population is uninsured. That's about 195,000 people. About three-quarters of those people describe themselves as involuntarily uninsured.
That means that had insurance been available, they would have taken it.
That's the Bureau's interim healthcare research director, Paul Polson. He says the reasons for not having insurance vary widely, but people commonly cite low-wage jobs and premiums that are too expensive. Polson says the information suggests many of these Montanans will sign up for insurance through the Affordable Care Act. The law, also known as Obamacare, provides subsidies for low-income Americans. But Polson says the survey was conducted too early to find out if the uninsured have been deterred by the technical problems plaguing the Obamacare website, healthcare.gov. The site has been a mess since launching on October 1st, glitches preventing people from signing up for plans. The Obama administration expects the website to be fully functioning by the end of November. In the meantime, the blundered rollout is making work a little more difficult for Affordable Care Act navigators. These are workers funded through federal grants, and their job is to help people get signed up for insurance on the exchange. The Montana Primary Care Association is one of three organizations receiving grants to employ navigators. Executive Director Bob Marsali.
It would have been so much nicer if people could have made their way through very elegantly and simply, and there's just been so much frustration and confusion around it.
Marsali says navigators are putting more emphasis than intended on helping people sign up for Affordable Care Act insurance plans through paper applications or over the phone. Helena Democratic Senator Christine Kaufman is directing the Navigator program for the Primary Care Association. She says the three navigators with the organization are spending a great deal of time training community health centers to provide advice on how to register. She wants to remind people the Affordable Care Act marketplace itself is not broken.
The plans are in place. They're good plans. They cover all of the essential benefits that people need.
Kaufman says uninsured Montanans can stop by their local community health centers or Planned Parenthood locations to get help from Affordable Care Act navigators or other trained counselors. The deadline to sign up for Obamacare insurance plans that start on the first of the year is December 15th. Uninsured Americans have until March 31st, 2014 to apply for coverage and avoid tax penalties. I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
Getting fresh fruits and veggies onto kids' plates is one of the goals of local farm-to-school efforts. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry has more on how this idea of staying local is going national with the support of the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
You want to have a salad? You do, right?
Lunchtime at Muldown Elementary School in Whitefish on this day features a salad, an apple, and chicken patty sandwiches. Food service director Jay Stagg says this meal does not feature much for local fare, but the milk is from Bozeman, and incorporating Montana-made food is no longer a novelty at lunchtime.
On Monday, we're going to have hamburgers that we pattied out ourselves and that we grill, local beef with barbecue baked beans, and all the beans, the dried beans, comes from somewhere in Montana.
Stagg says he's been contracting with local ranchers to buy cows, have them processed at a local facility, and also buying vegetables from nearby farms. He says they're doing more processing in-house to keep within the budget.
This year I have focused on tomatoes and tomato products. We've bought quite, hundreds of pounds of tomatoes and processed them that then become our pizza sauce, our spaghetti sauce.
Seventh graders at Whitefish also plant a garden on a former baseball diamond on the Whitefish School's campus in the spring, which they harvest when they return as eighth graders in the fall. In all, Stagg reports about 30% of the Whitefish School District's food budget goes farm to school, with the garden and buying local and Montana products. That's among the highest percentages in the state, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The USDA recently conducted a census of schools across the state and the country. Plevna in eastern Montana reported the highest amount spent on farm-to-school at 35%. USDA Undersecretary for Food, Nutrition, and Consumer Services, Kevin Concannon, says the statewide average is 12%. He says the USDA offers grants to help build these programs, and the goal is to get farm-to-school in more districts to supply meals and create an educational opportunity.
Educating students about where food comes from, but also the importance of consistently eating healthy foods, less processed foods, and farm to school is part of the movement that helps us move that down the road.
Food service director Jay Stagg says they'll have school-grown vegetables they've processed and frozen to use in lunches until about February. He says one thing they're doing in school lunch is trying to reproduce popular, familiar food items in a healthier way.
Instead of buying just a store-bought corn dog, actually making a corn dog with, an all-natural pork or beef dog, making the biscuit mix that goes around it. It's been a great challenge to get kids to eat something they're familiar with, but in a little bit of a different form.
There is still the ever-popular pizza day. The big difference is the sauce was made in-house, maybe even with made in Montana tomatoes. Katrin Fry reporting from the Flathead.
There's some mayonnaise and ketchup.
When saxophone player Madeline Mad Duran started playing jazz in the late 60s, there weren't a lot of women in jazz instrumentalists. That didn't stop her from entering the male-dominated field to do something she loves. Duran and her husband, guitarist Eddie Duran, are known as San Francisco's first couple of instrumental jazz. Mad Duran was in Bozeman recently to perform at this year's jazz festival, celebrating women in jazz. In this interview with news director Sally Mock, Duran talks about how her training as a classical musician laid the foundation for her successful jazz career.
Musicality is so crucial in classical playing, and also just the idea of being able to control your instrument dynamically and intonation-wise, and to get clean articulation, things like this.
And technical skill, right?
Yeah, technical skills, exactly.
And then in high school, you had an opportunity to go to the Monterey Jazz Festival, and that really hooked you on jazz?
Well, I think I was hooked on jazz, but, you know, jazz is like one of these things that everybody arrives at a different way. And that kind of like, I couldn't, at a young age, kind of find my own path. And so the classical music was so much more structured, you know. You practice this page, and you get really good at it, and then you go on to the next one, and then that page is a little bit more difficult. And so the progression is much, you know, it's so easy to see. But jazz is not like that. And so I couldn't get a grip on jazz, but I started playing when I was 12, saxophone, and I really loved it, but not enough to get super serious about it.
You got super serious about it, seems to me, when you met your husband, the jazz guitarist Eddie Duran.
Yeah, Eddie Duran. You know, Eddie was immersed in the scene in San Francisco, and he knew all the cats, as we call them. So, you know, I met with him and played for him. I asked him, he says, well, you have some talent, you know. But he never said anything more than that. And then shortly after that, I said, do you think I could be a jazz musician? And he said, yeah, you could be a jazz musician, but you got to practice. And I just thought that was just too simple. You know, I'd been practicing classically for 13 years and never thought I could just practice and get good at jazz. But it was a little bit more to it than that, but that's essentially it, practice. Putting in the time and doing the work that you need to do in order to accomplish the things that you want to accomplish. So basically in jazz, you have to design, you know, what it is. Who do you want to sound like? What do you want to sound like? And then you have to go after that.
And one of your influences, I read, was one of the greatest jazz saxophonists, Stan Getz.
Yeah. Yeah, Stan was, almost day one of playing the saxophone, I emulated his playing because I love that bossa nova thing, you know. So he was very into that at around 67 when I kind of started the saxophone. His sound and everything, his approach to the instrument was almost like classical, in my opinion. And I just gravitated towards that and actually got pretty darn close to his sound and everything.
At that time, and I think still today, there aren't nearly as many female jazz instrumentalists as there are men. I think if you were to ask someone, even if they're not jazz aficionados, to name some jazz female musicians, they would name vocalists probably, like Billie Holiday, Ella Fitzgerald, and so on. People would be hard put to name probably, unless they're into jazz, a woman.
True. It is changing a little bit. You know, there's some awfully talented young female jazz musicians. When I was growing up, yeah, I was one of the only ones. I was kind of an oddity, but I just kept doing it because it just felt so good.
Was it hard? Did anyone give you a hard time?
You know, I had a pretty easy go of it. I have to admit, you know, they could see how serious I was and how much time I put into my music, and I don't know if anybody was going to give me any trouble. So that's what I recommend for anyone, even men, you know. Just work really hard at something you want, and it's undeniable
You have done an album with your husband, Eddie Duran, and it's called From Here to the Moon. It's kind of the classic bebop jazz, isn't it?
Yes, definitely a bebop player, because when I grew up, I heard Charlie Parker when I was like 18, 19 years old, and I was just blown away by how someone could play so fast and improvise, which means no preconceived idea of what he was going to play. And it just sounded so perfect to me, and that kind of was a turning point for me as to say, I'm not ready to do that. So then when I was ready to do it, I wanted to do it very, very badly.
There's a tune on that album, and it's a medley of My Favorite Things and Take Five. I love that old standard, and I love what you all did with that on that album.
Much, yeah. You know, Paul Desmond is one of my big-time influences as well. I just love the way he played Take Five. And then I started listening to My Favorite Things, which I really enjoy, and I said, you know, we could play this in five. So I said, well, why don't we combine the two? And sure enough, it just worked out so well.
Do you like Brubeck's version of it?
Oh, most definitely, yeah.
Who would not, right?
Yes, but essential.
You have said, quote, the perfect turn of a melody has the ability to change our destiny. That's pretty heavy.
Yeah. I mean, just think about the melodies that some of these standard songs are based on, and they conjure up so many memories. And the lyrics to these standards are, you know, it's obvious these composers have lived, you know, lived a life. It's just, it's an amazing ability to have. And I just feel so incredibly fortunate to not only be able to do it, but have the desire and the fortitude to make it happen.
You have a solo album. It's called Simply Mad, and there's a great tune on that album that I really like called Blase Blanc.
We have the wine country very close to San Francisco, and one day Eddie and I, we traveled up there, and he got this glass of wine at the bar, and it just tasted so blasé. And I said, hey, that would be a good name for a tune, Blasé Blanc.
And the tune does kind of evoke that a little bit, I have to say.
Nice.
I read also that you played in an all-woman big band in New York City.
Yeah, that was Kit McClure. That was my first all-big band, woman's all-big band. You know, it's a kick to play with all women. They were pretty good. A little commercial, but that's what she was going for at that time.
You mentor young musicians, don't you? I've noticed that you've performed with a lot of newer female jazz musicians and male, too.
Most definitely. I feel teaching is in my soul. I teach anything. You know, if I know something, I'm going to let you know about it. It's just a natural evolution for me, and to see young kids really enjoying music, it's so enriching. I just feel...
Plus, you're passing on a tremendous heritage.
Absolutely. I have students all the way from age 83 to 9. Yeah, I love it all.
There's a quote that the great San Francisco Chronicle columnist Herb Cain wrote about you, and he said, quote, Mad Duran is just what jazz needs, soul, swing, and a breath of femininity.
Yeah. Jazz can get a little hard-edged at times, aggressive and angry almost. So I really don't go there with that. I'm much more soft. Oriented, because there's so much to say, just melodically. I mean, it's all good. That's just my preference. I'm more on the love side of jazz.
Do you have concerns about jazz surviving? It certainly has had its peaks and valleys over the years, and there are always hardcore fans, but do you worry about the future of jazz? It's such a quintessential American genre of music, but it has had its peaks and valleys.
No, I don't worry about it because it's not really the music that has its peaks and valleys. It's the level of time and interest that people have to spend listening to it. And I think that we're into a new era, just starting out, that more people are going to be interested in exploring creativity. And this is what I really believe. I believe that music is going to be one of those things that people are going to realize that how much they've missed, and they're going to want it tenfold. And I believe that the entire industry is just waiting to boom, believe it or not. I'm an optimist anyway, and we're into a new era at this point. I'm happy to be on the planet at this time in the existence.
Well, we're happy you're on the planet and your music as well. I have been speaking with jazz musician Mad Duran, and we've been talking about both her career and the state of jazz currently, and it's just been such a pleasure to listen to your music and also to talk with you about it.
All right. Keep swinging.
For more information about Mad Duran and her music, go to her website, madduran.com.
Now for tonight's forecast. What's the divide tonight? Snow showers are likely with lows in the 20s. Tomorrow, look for mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain and snow with highs in the upper 30s to mid 40s. In central Montana tonight, expect mostly cloudy skies with a chance of snow through the night and lows 20 to 25 degrees. Tomorrow calls for mostly cloudy skies becoming partly cloudy with a slight chance of snow and highs 35 to 45 degrees. In southwest Montana tonight, it should be mostly cloudy with a chance of snow and lows 20 to 25 degrees. Tomorrow, expect mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of snow through the day and highs 35 to 45 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Dan Gallagher.
This is Dan Gallagher with Veterans Viewpoint. Next Monday, November 11th, is Veterans Day. And let me tell you about a couple of things planned for that day. First of all, the annual ceremony at the Doughboy statue on the Missoula County Courthouse lawn will begin at 11 a.m. and last for a little more than an hour. But more about that in a minute. On the evening of November 11th, Transition Missoula will sponsor the showing of a 40-minute film entitled Ground Operations, Battlefields to Farm Fields. It'll be shown at the University Theater on the UM campus at 6 p.m. with a discussion period to follow. This film is about a consolidated effort to help veterans transition from war to the field of agriculture, the theory being that working the land is both rewarding and therapeutic. Soldiers returning from war seek both, and as a veteran and an old farm boy, I can validate that. The film will be enlightening and may lead some of the veterans who heed its call to find an outlet for some of the issues that war created for them. Admission is free, and you should be there. And back to the 11 a.m. ceremony on the Missoula County Courthouse lawn. The main speakers will be Montana's senior U.S. Senator Max Baucus and Montana's Lieutenant Governor John Walsh, himself a veteran of the Iraq War. Missoula's American Legion Post 101 sponsors this event, and as we do each year, we've established a theme for the 2013 Veterans Day ceremony, that theme being, for those with wounds that show no scars. We'll be looking at some of the reasons for, and more importantly, some of the things that can and must be done by our government and our citizenry to treat for and even prevent the level of damage that too often results from the veterans' exposure to combat. Our ceremony honors and pays tribute to the veterans' service and sacrifice and provides an opportunity for those in attendance to share their personal remembrance of the veterans important in their lives. But it'll also be a time to talk about and reflect upon the short and long-term psychological, emotional, and even spiritual damage that is the almost inevitable result of war upon those sent to fight it. And that damage ranges in severity among the veteran population, from a slightly diminished capacity to deal with stress or authority or failure, to enduring and even debilitating depression and anxiety. In its most severe state, these invisible wounds lead to rates of unemployment, incarceration, homelessness, substance abuse, and family breakup that are double among the veteran population compared to their non-veteran contemporaries. And at its most tragic depth, These wounds that show no scars lead to a suicide rate among veterans that is so alarmingly high that I cannot comprehend why our government and countrymen don't regard it as a social problem as big as any of the others which seem to occupy our attention. You want some supporting statistics? Okay. In 2012, the Defense Department acknowledged that the number of in-service soldier veterans who took their own lives averaged almost exactly one per day. That's right. Every day, a soldier, most of them veterans of Middle East fighting, chose to end their own lives rather than face the stress that they found when they came back from the war. Of course, that's only the number acknowledged by the military services and does not include those who died in a manner that couldn't officially be termed suicide, but may have been an example for that being the otherwise unexplainable single car accident. Now, neither does this reported number even touch on those who are veterans and are no longer part of the military. The suicide numbers for the Vietnam veteran community are nothing short of horrible. 58,000 American GIs died in Vietnam combat, yet, according to data by responsible sources such as the National Association of Suicidology, at least 70,000 Vietnam veterans have died by their own hand since returning from that war. In other words, more Vietnam vets have committed suicide than the number of their buddies who were killed by that war's enemy. And now, and this should shock and sadden us all, suicide among Iraq-Afghan veterans is on a par with that statistic among Vietnam veterans. You know, it's easy to identify the physical wounds of war, and we all have an obligation to assure treatment for those wounded. But the war-caused wounds that show no scars are as plentiful and much more sinister. And it's our moral and legal obligation to treat and minimize the potential damage of those wounds. At the Post-101 Veterans Day ceremony on the Missoula County Courthouse grounds at 11 a.m. on Monday, November 11th, we will definitely be addressing this matter. So plan to be there. And by the way, this year we'll have warm-up tents to ward off the effects of the inclement weather that frequently accompanies Veterans Day. So see you there on Veterans Day, okay? This is Dan Gallagher with Veterans Viewpoint.
Dan Gallagher is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.